I see that. But you ain't unique. We got a whole lot of personality out on that line. Boys come and go in and out of that bottle life. Popping pills, smoking dope, shooting that shit in their arm. Gambling the most lawyers, robbing each other, shooting each other. Fucking each other. Fucking each other over whatever. Some men stay, make a living, some go to prison. Yeah, I don't really give a shit. I'd give a shit if I could, but I find it don't do it no good one way or the other. They pay $2.95 a week.
Smoke on and go home with something to poke on. Sup, bitch? Coming real. It's the Jordan Lynn program. That is the Jordan Lynn program. Welcome to the Jordan Lynn program 78.
UFC 78 validation. Is that right?
That was fucking Rashad Evans versus somebody. He had to get validated. I might be wrong on that shit. 79 was Nemesis, I think. Whatever! Welcome to the Jordan Lear program, hosted by Jordan Lear. Jordan Lear, the actor, comedian, filmmaker, fucking up by not playing his video on time the way I want to start this podcast. Did I mention that I'm a writer? Yeah, I'm a writer, bitch. I write. That's how I feel. I feel cocky walking down the street. I'm like, I'm a writer. You writer, motherfucker. Ooh, especially when I lived in LA, I used to feel like so fucking about writers. Because everyone says they're a writer at the end of what they do in entertainment. Like, you know, I'm a filmmaker, I'm a comedian, I'm a director, and also a writer. And what they mean is they go, hey, if you have a writing job, I'll do it. And I'm sure I could figure it out. But they don't really fucking write. They've never written anything besides Facebook statuses and tweets. Not that they don't have the ability to, but as old, the guy Stephen Pressfield said, he's like, dude, a professional wakes up and just fucking does the shit. And, I don't know if you know this about me, but your boy, I wake up and write pretty much every morning, you know, unless I'm editing a movie. And, maybe that'll change with when I'm getting going on my feature film and shit. But, yeah, I pretty much am always working on a screenplay in general, or I'm brushing one up, and I love it. It's an addiction. I've figured out at this stage in my life that is my flow state. I like creating. That is what makes me feel fulfilled at the end of the day, that I wrote, you know, or at least tried to write for fucking a couple hours. You know, sometimes when you write, you only get like a line down, but you sit there and, you know, you work to finish the projects, and I love it, man. It's something that, hey, it's very financially unrewarding. Hey, maybe it'll pay off someday. I made a little money in spurts at that, but it's a thing I've heard, and obviously I'm hoping, because I've been doing it. I wrote my first screenplay. Okay, because here's another thing. Everyone says they write. I get you write a little bit, you know, and like a lot, every stand-up, I get you're always writing, but a lot of stand-up writers will also tout themselves as like screenwriters just because in their head they're like, well, if they would tell me, you know, if they would give me a script to write, I would write it, you know. And a lot of people have ideas in their head, a lot, and there's nothing wrong with that, you know. A lot of people have ideas in their head, they're telling you, but they've never written it down, and they're like, well, I would. And no offense, but you ought to fucking sit down and type it out so we can talk and we can trade ideas, and I can read yours, you can read mine. Anyways, I'm posturing a lot as I get into this. I wrote my first screenplay in college, and it was a screenwriting class. Our teacher, Bill Vincent at MSU, he mainly just told us to write 10 pages every week. And we talked screenwriting, and we talked character a little bit, and plot, and genre, a little. In my other classes, we talked more. But in his, he just wanted us to fucking write 10 pages every week. And at the end of the semester, you have a screenplay, you know, you have, I mean, it was about 10, 11 weeks, so yeah, you come out to 110, 120 page script, what have you. In script writing terms, whether it's TV, movie, whatever, there's variations of this, but one page equals 1 minute of screen time, typically. Remember this guy, Bryce, taught me that when I was in college. I guess I was a sophomore when I started writing screenplays. That's what I'm remembering right now. Because I acted in college, like on these, you know, we had this collection of student-ran TV shows, MSU Telecasters. And then someone was starting a new show, and they asked me if I wanted to write for it for some reason. What was her? Joanna Darby, was that her name? She was awesome. I think she does music now. She asked me to write, and another writer, Bryce, I forget his last name, I feel bad. He taught me, you know, the pages a minute, and I barely wrote for that show, but it got me kind of, like, typing away and looking at scripts and, you know, like I had been. It's interesting. Anyways, it wasn't until my senior year that my senior year screenwriting class, Bill Vincent, had us complete a screenplay. And my first idea for a feature, now mind you, I didn't even write a 20, 30 page screenplay yet at this point. Wait, I'm taking it back. I don't give a fuck if this is disjointed. You know who you're listening to. This is the Jordan Lear program. I did write a 30 page screenplay the summer before. Yeah, because I had script writing software and I made a comedy called fucking Jake and Steve, and it was kind of about me and my roommate Josh Russell, about us just like hanging out, having fun in college, and just being stupid, basically. I should dig that up somewhere. I think these are on a PC laptop somewhere. Need to crack that open. Anyways, the senior year, Bill Vincent's class, are you with me? He asked us to write a feature script, and I'm all into Tarantino. I'm all into Martin Scorsese. I'm like, that's the shit, man. Tarantino's got funny movies, but he's pulling out fucking guns and blood, and it's cool, and it's and Scorsese does that, and it's always funny, and there's cool music. I was like, I love that style. So I came up with this crime story type deal called, it was like a very like noir type deal called Constantine. Yeah. And I named it after my hometown, Constantine. But it was a fictional town. Like it was like a fictional town of Constantine, and it was about this, like, you know, I need to dig this up too, because I do like this story actually. But it was about like two gangsters coming into town to fucking do some shit, and one of them you are rooting for because he's doing it for the right reasons. The other one's evil, and there's this crime overlord dude called fucking, I forget what I named him, but it was cool. And Bill Vincent read for it every week, and he loved doing it. Dude, one of my friends, Adrian Earhart, not Earhart, that's a comic I met. Adrian Sundquist from MSU. Jesus Christ, you live so much fucking life, you blend people's fucking names together. I mean, they're both writers. Adrian Sundquist told me, she goes, hey, if you fucking write for his class, give him a part, because he'll like that. Not that our grade even mattered. You just had to write or not, but I don't know. He did like it, and he did good. And he liked my script, and maybe it was just because I put him in it. Anyways, I write this fucking crime noir called Constantine. I can't remember how it went or ended even. I need to dig that up, because I don't know. It's the first one I wrote. I can't lose that. That's probably why I kept that shit. I remember everyone liking my dialogue because it was funny. I didn't give a fuck. And I was really had people argue. And, you know, like, I'm so influenced by Tarantino at the time. I'm just fucking flying it off the handle and thinking, I don't know. I'm I need a fucking drink of water. I am proud of my dialogue. That's all I can say. And I think it's colorful. And I use the fuck word F a lot. And I'm kind of stupid with it. But I think that's, you know. I'm very influenced by, well, these days, I'm influenced by, like, I was going to say John Steinbeck and David Mamet. How they kind of, sometimes it's nonsensical the way the characters talk back and forth. But that's the way people talk. And as long as you're putting the right things around it, you know what's being said. You know, that waiting for Godot shit, or I don't know, getting off on a tangent. That was my first screenplay I wrote. I need to find it. Now, I move out to Los Angeles after I graduate, and I show up, and I'm telling everyone, I'm like, you know, I want to be a stand-up first and foremost. I think I just wanted everyone to know I was tough, so I led with that. But I was trying to act and make movies and write my own movies, even though I'd only written one thing at the time. And I knew I wanted to do comedy, but I'm not even sure what I want to do comedic-wise. Anyways, I pretty much bury myself in stand-up from 2012 to 2014, 15, and music, too. God, I forget how much fucking music, because I didn't even move out there for that. And then I ended up getting shows, so I just said, fuck it. Played a bunch of badass shows at the Viper Room and fucking House of Blues and shit with Lorna Lograsso. Shout out. In 2015, I pick up the keyboard again. The shit. You know what? And this is where I got into horror. This is where I started getting into horror, because I always kind of had a, like, what? I just thought horror movies were shitty. You know, like, one of the last ones I tried to see in high school was The Eye with Jessica Alba. And these days, I love that shit. And even a bad movie with a good premise, I kind of like, you know. But at the time, I was like, ah, those are just bad movies. Except for Scream. I always like Scream. Everyone likes Scream. And I just had this feeling one night, like I wanted to write a horror short. I was like, I think it'd be fun to write. Now, mind you, at this time, I'm not waking up every morning and fucking writing and shit. I'm, you know, doing all sorts of other fucking shit. Coming out, I'm writing jokes throughout the day if they come to me, and sitting down, fleshing it out, jerk off joke. So I sit down one night, and I was like, I just think it'd be cool to write an opening scene, because I think in my head, I it's like I figured it out. Like, you think you know what writing is, and you think you know what plot is, and you think you know for sure the way something is supposed to go. But I really thought about it. I was like, oh, yeah, every horror movie starts with a kill. Duh, of course, yeah. But I don't know. It's just not apparent that there's a real epic one. And I was like, oh, that's what I loved about Scream. It was like a film before a film type deal. Anyway, so I sit down and I was like, oh, it's no pressure. You never wrote horror before. And I was like, I think I was getting that vibe like I could put humor into it. Because I don't like writing just straight comedy. I really don't. Like, just, I'm learning to work with that these days, because I've written some comedic things that I like the way I did it. But, you know, it's just, it's tough. I like writing dark movies that are funny, you know, and I like writing comedies that are dark. That makes sense. Anyways, I write this screenplay, a short called One Night Only, that is about a guy who's matching with a killer on Tinder, and him and his buddy are actually planning to go over, and the buddy's going to camp out outside and tape it. And then it turns out that the girl is a killer and she kills him. Anyways, I thought it was cool. Some rock and roll horror type shit. So I write this shit out, and then I'm like, I'm going to fucking shoot this shit. And then somewhere along there, I was like, wait, that's the opening scene. If that could work as an opening scene, let's fucking run with, let's, I'm watching myself on this TV, I'm like doing the hand thing too. let's write the rest of it, and it felt like the first time, you know, feel like the first time, it feels like the very first time, I would climb any mountain. Anyways, I wrote it, and I just kept working at it, and I kept, you know, admittedly so, watching a bunch of other movies, being like, all right. And it's just like, you know, looking back in college. And I knew screenplay format. I read Sid Field. I got it. Just because you get it, though, it's fucking hard, man. I know that in the first 10 pages of a feature film, you got to establish the characters, probably the plot. For sure, by like page 20, that plot is like rolling, dude. And then page 20 to 60 is like the meat of the motherfucker, you know, and you got to establish the backdrop of what's going on and who your lead characters are and what they're trying to attain and the relationships. And then page 60 to 90, you know, and then variation of like 70 to 100 or whatever. The last third of it, you know, it's the 3-act structure. You're falling action, resolution.
The big part of that is you establish that motherfucking who the set of characters and fucking who everyone is within the first 20, you know, and you can have shit go out of order. You know, that's the beauty of Tarantino and Coen Brothers and when you're really getting into writing. And I love it. I love it. I don't know. I fell in love with it as I wrote this screenplay about these college characters in this slasher on campus that was using a dating app. And I still have that, you know. We went on to later, I pitched that to my buddy Rishi and Amanda Aria, and we made it. It's on my YouTube. Or it's not on my YouTube. I'm sorry. It's on, fuck. Go to my website, jordanlear.com, on my films. It's for sure on there, One Night Only. We shot the whole thing, and it's on this other website called, I feel bad, Film Shorts or something. It's on some shorts website right now. It's great. It's fucking awesome. I'm very happy with how it turned out. I would love to reshoot the whole thing as a feature film one day. Would love that. Anyways, dude, I wrote that slasher and I was like, that's fucking cool. And I felt like slasher or horror was kind of my fucking wheelhouse. And so I wrote another slasher after that to completion, that I'm not going to talk about because, may or may not be selling it. We're selling. I'm not pitching that today. It's already been pitched. There's already contracts and fucking what. Anyways, for the second one, I mean, we're at a second one, by this time I'm feeling like a badass, and I, you know what? It was around 2018 that I had like finished these two, and then I finished a third. I made a third one that was like an action, zombie horror type one. It's Thanksgiving themed. That's all I'll say about it. If you know me, if you want to see any of this, you can read the shit. So then I got three screenplays under my belt. Three, and they're all horror, pretty much. Horror comedy. That's the other thing. I found that's how I could write comedy and horror and stuff like that. Now that's three plus four if you include the college one. And also between there, me and Rishi Aria, we sat down, we wrote another screenplay, of which I'm not going to tell you the plot because we're still trying to sell it. But say that's what I'm saying. You just fucking make this shit and you write it and you're like, hold on to it. And you tell people privately that you trust about it, that might get you somewhere, whatever. Me and Rishi, we wrote together, which that's the first and probably only time I've ever written something with someone. We wrote, what was it, like six episodes? Slash, we also wrote, it as a feature film, as a way to pitch it as both. You know what I mean? Of a first season slash feature film. I like the idea of doing it as a season, to tell you the truth. It's about pro wrestling, okay? What? That's not giving it away. Fuck it. Meanwhile, dude, I remember we made it, and we were just holding on to it. And they go on to make, like, Glow, and they make some other fucking shitty comedy show. I don't think Glow's shitty. It's just it wasn't for me. But they made some other drama that I didn't fucking like. Anyways, and we're like, oh, well, fuck, they did the wrestling idea. And I'm like, we just need them to fail so then we can get our shot. And hopefully we still will. All right. So who's keeping score at home? I got like 3/4 screenplays that are feature films. I got a TV show. Oh, I also had another TV show. I wrote a TV show about my job doing videography for court reporting and shit, which I did in LA for 3 years. I wrote 8 episodes of that show. That was cool. I need to revisit that time. Anyway, so I'm a mother farting writer, baby. Wrote some shit. Wrote it. I went to New York last year for the first time. I was all inspired by plays. I wrote my first play, which is very much like a feature film in terms of length. You just think about it differently in terms of how it's going to be produced. But that was fun. That was badass. That also made me feel like I want to do everything as a play and then a movie if I could. You know what I mean? That sequence. I had this idea that I would do that too. Like you take things, put them on stage first, and then you put them on TV. Or TV or movies, but you know what I mean. But put it on stage first, always. Like that's the way to like premiere it. You know, the way you go from like a table read to shooting it. Go from a table read to the stage, to fucking shooting it. Then you know. Anywho,
where am I at on my life? I wrote a play. I started writing another play. I'm halfway through that other play. I come home this past summer for the strike and all that shit. I wrote another Halloween horror thing. I wrote about like 60 pages of this Halloween horror screenplay. Anyways, I'm on this shit. I sprout up this idea about this alien thing I want to write. Anyways, all this pretty much drama. Meanwhile, somewhere in my head, and I think it goes back to fucking childhood, because of course it does. I always thought about writing something about, like, you know, my life. My life growing up, like me, kind of, you know, and I didn't know what that was. And I remember just feeling feelings growing up and feeling like, man, there needs to be like a story about this told one day, you know. You know, when anything epic happens when you're young, or just any time, you know, whether there's a big, you know, a fire and someone saves someone, it's an amazing story. You're like, they're going to make a movie out of this one day. Or, you know, someone overcomes adversity and you see how far a kid came. Or, you know, you're like, yeah, they're going to make a movie about that. And I just remember having feelings like that throughout being a kid. And, like, when my sister went to the military, definitely then. That's when I really, and then when she came home and whenever, you know, just transitions. You know what it is? Like, it's transitions in life. That's what really fucking always makes me think, like, oh, fuck, there's that transition scene in the movie and shit. And mind you, I've never written a drama. That's not true at all. Because the play, the play I wrote last year, Love is an Algorithm, is very much a drama. It's comedy. Maybe that was more of my first time dipping into that. Yeah. Yeah, I guess it was. That opened this up a lot. But I don't know. There's just something about growing up. I grew up in Michiana, you know, they call it Michiana because it's Michigan and Indiana. It's right on the line and right at the border. And just something about the small town. And I know that's way more common. That's super common. Like everyone's from a fucking small town. But I think that maybe that's, it doesn't mean it's not weird though. Like there's just a weird thing about how everything revolves around sports. And there's like, dude, in small towns, it's like Game of Thrones. It really is. The things about your name and your reputation, everyone knows everyone. And there's just a lot of like people holding up smiles, you know, and they're hiding fucking frowns and cries, or they're just giving you the fucking frowns and fucking cries. And whenever you deserve a smile when you see them, there's a lot of that. And, My dad always worked at the trailer factories here in Michiana. And if you don't know, it's the industry, you know, to work here. It's like they make most of the RVs in the United States, I think the world, in this Michiana area. And it's where all the factories are, and it's assembly line, and they pump it out. And, you know, it's the type of thing where it's in everywhere because everyone's dad or everyone knows someone that's down there. And, you know, when the economy hits, those places get fucking hit hard and a lot of people lose jobs, and it's very feast or famine, you know, and it's hard ass work. I've never fucking done it ever. I've done every type of manual labor you could think of in the world because my dad was a carpenter. And he was a carpenter by trade in Arizona and everything. And you move here and it's just like, you know, you financially for a family, you're better off getting a job on the line and trying to get health insurance and shit than, you know, trying to get out there. It's fucking hard. My dad tried both. I know he tried, there are very few carpenters on this planet as good as my father, like, period. Like, I don't know, man. There are very few, you know, workers, you know, and there's a lot of good, but man, my dad is this fucking, like, a craftsman when it comes to framing a house and building it up and getting shit done. And he tried, but like having a business here, you know, you make more money here. There's more consistent work and reshingling houses and tearing off shingles, which is another thing we fucking did a ton of. Anyways, I'm going on this tangent. I always wanted to write about this shit. And I just want to write about like our family and like, I just want to write about, like, not our everyone's family. I want to write about everyone. Everyone's experiences. And I had this idea brewing in me called The Line. I got an idea. I was like, I would call it The Line. I was like, it would be about you going to work, man. It would be about the family. And it would be about, like, football and sports. And it would be about fucking Christmas presents and, you know, who the fuck's got regular TV and cable TV. And that's the thing. I want to put it in 1999, right on the line of the new millennium of, you know, the digital age, Y2K, fucking 9/11, the war, you know, internet. You know, you remember whenever people fucking, some people didn't have internet and some people fucking did. You know what I mean? And some people had high-speed internet and some people fucking didn't. And some kids couldn't watch TV, and some couldn't, and some had it or didn't. Some could watch R-rated movies, and fucking some kids couldn't read fucking Harry Potter. You know, there's a lot of fucking boundary lines. You know, I started thinking of line as a metaphor between, you know, the assembly line. All the guys working on the line, doing lines of drugs, you know, doing, trying to ride that line of sobriety, and the line of discomfort and happiness, the line of happiness and unhappiness and shit, and the line of prestige and a town and the fucking goal line. I don't know. I wanted every, what is it? So anyways, I've been brewing this fucking idea and I've been writing on it. And for about a year, I've been hardcore saying need to write it. And I've been conceptualizing it for a long fucking time, man. And telling people about it and rethinking it. And I landed on wanting it to be episodic season-wise. And I was like, okay, that's what I would do. I would start it, start it in 1999, have it go about 8 seasons, 2008 or so. I fucking wrote it, man, okay? And I wrote an opening scene probably a year ago. Wrote an opening scene a year ago I was happy about. And it was all like, yeah, it's all sad and traumatic and shit. And then it cuts into the fucking, the work day. And I fucking sat down like a month ago. I was like, dude, before I go back to New York, I'm finishing this shit. I go, I'm in Michiana. I'm in Michigan. I'm crossing the state line like every day. I'm fucking, you know, I've been doing it. I've been going up to my hometown. I've been around here. Been doing a bunch of hometown shit that I probably would have done if I never left. And I've been out doing it. And it just sort of happened, man. And I've lived a lot of life while I've been home. And I've two or three times a week, I've been driving past where the trailer factories are in the RV industry. And, you know, it's all still here, man. It's like some fucking witchy shit. The feeling I'm trying to capture and write about with people and people trying to fucking express themselves and trying to just keep their fucking lives together. And been living it, dude. And I'm so happy I fucking wrote it. I'm a writer, motherfucker, not just at Starbucks. And, dude, I wrote it and then came out to like 70 pages. I was like, that's a long ass pilot, man. You know, because at a certain point, you're just like, you write it and you keep have an idea of a finish line. And then you're trying to wrap it up, and then you're like, dude, well, whenever it finishes, and it just kind of kept going. And, there's so much more I want to write now. There's so much more. I'm like, God, this is just scratching the surface. I'm like, after 70 pages, I barely got into what I fucking am getting ready to fucking go into on this. And, you know, I was inspired also by Upton Sinclair. I read Oil, and here's the thing about what I wrote, when I say it's about my life, it's not about my life. Like, it is and it isn't, you know. And some people say that's a cop-out, you know, but I say that's the way I feel about it with art, man. I feel like I'm calling it art. I'm not saying this is exact fact. I'm not saying anything. I'm saying this is to be argued about, you know. This is to be divisive, if anything, and tell me I'm wrong, tell me it's wrong, tell me... Give me your spin on it, you know? And Upton Sinclair wrote Oil, and he changed all the names, but he kept a lot of the... He said he shuffled the deck. He said he changed all the names, locations, made up, you know, names and titles and switched versions of stories. And that's what I've done, you know? Everything... It's, like, about my family, but it's not. Like, I'm choosing, like... all sorts of different instances and issues and character traits from the whole town and America too. You know, I've been in LA and I've spoke to people about their experiences in small town and new people, my girlfriend, stuff she's told me, and I've shuffled the deck, you know. I've had a bunch of people ask from my hometown. They're like, you know what? I can't wait to see who's who. I can't say, you know, I can't wait to see what who plays who, like in the script, like it's an exact thing, you know, like as if like one fucking townsperson is like a crazy asshole and I'm gonna write their exact name and like or whatever. No, I'm not doing that. And now with my parents too. I don't know. Anyways, I write this shit. I feel all good about it. And I've got fucking, it's like, what do you do with this shit? And with every other screenplay I've written in my life, I've pretty much held on to. And if I'm talking with an artist, I pitch it. I'll tell them about it if they ask. And if they want to see it, I'll send it to them. But you always keep this shit under wraps in a way because you're afraid of people stealing it. Okay? And it's... that's a fucked up way to live, man. Whenever you're trying to get ideas out there, but you're trying to keep them to yourself. I ain't doing that shit. Fuck that. I'm over it, dude. I'm going to try and be a little smart about it if I can. But with this one, I was like, I'm putting it out there. I'm like posting on Facebook that it's finished and Instagram, and I'm going to post a link and whoever wants to read it, there you fucking go. And yo, I post on shit every day on purpose, put my content out there so I can get a little fucking internet presence going, you know what I mean? Anyway, I post all the time, and I get some love, and I got so much support from my hometown, but I have never got the response that I've gotten from this, you know? And on top of that, I've never had so many people read my writing, ask to read it, and actually read it. Like, within 24 hours, dude. Those other screenplays I've been telling you about, like, one or two people have ever read any of them. And it ain't because I haven't sent it to people. It's because it fucking sucks to read, man. I don't like reading bullshit. I love to read, but sometimes it's work, man. And, you know, I've read a lot of my friends' screenplays. I really have, you know. Sometimes someone sends you a screenplay and you want to fucking, even if it's good, you're like, I don't want to be reading this. I want to be watching it. Anyways, I post it, man. I've got teachers. I've got relatives posting like, I want to read it. I want to read it. And classmates and shit. And I don't know. It's like, it's kind of overwhelmed. I'm like, I think, you know, art's supposed to be fun, but the older I get, the more I feel like it's important. And there's so much important shit in the world, but for me, to my life, when I wrote this, I was like, this shit's important, man. Like, it makes me, like, this is like, not just me. I'm like, there's kids that, like I grew up good. I really did. There's kids that grew up in shit, man. And this ain't all about that. And there's adults that, like, had to deal with shit around St. Joe. Everyone, I don't know, and I'm not blaming anyone. I'm just, there's a story that needs to be told the right way about this shit. And with all due respect to Friday Night Lights, you know, it ain't about fucking losing a football game and whether you won or lost, you know. It's about the people that fucking lost or won in life while that fucking game happened, and no one fucking remembers the score of that game, whether they won or lost. That's the truth. Period. No one remembers or gives a shit about any of the fucking championships. This isn't all about football, but I just mean there's a bigger thing about stature, too. Let's say that. I don't want to villainize anything that happened in my hometown, or, well, except for, like, heinous shit. But there's a vibe of fucking Game of Thrones about people are treated differently for this and what's valued. And what your time is spent on. And I just want, I don't know. I felt good about what I wrote, man. Gosh. I hope my parents aren't embarrassed. Not that there's no reason for them to be, but you know what? I wrote it and the main characters are dealing with sobriety in this script. But so is fucking everybody, okay? And it's not my certain things aren't my story to tell, but it's not that. It's not, whatever. The main character is going to AA meetings, okay? Whenever we moved to Michigan, my dad fucking went to AA meetings. They didn't drink for like 20, 30 years. That doesn't mean the main character is him. You know what I mean? Because I just wrote a fucking pilot and it's about ready to go some all sorts of different ways. And that's the thing. I don't know. I posted it. It wasn't until I posted it and people read it and I'm like, oh, I hope the people don't like think differently of my parents or anything. And then when I even thought about it, I'm like, reread the script and I'm like, I don't know. The guy in the script seems like a good guy that fucking is dealing with it and went to work and is good to his kids, you know? And I'm like, that's my dad was. He was. It's great. I don't know. Dude, I had so, but I had like some aunts that would be like, I want to rate it. And dude, you know, I've got a fucking nosy family. They're just nosy, gossiping family, and I love them. But I just couldn't, as soon as everyone wanted to read it, and then teachers and stuff, I'm just like, oh man, I wonder if my parents are like coming mad that I wrote this. And I've told them about it many times. I don't think they've read it in its entirety unless they clicked on that link on Brightbug. They will. My mom does read all my shit. She's great. Oh, I don't know, man. You gotta do that as an artist. Just put it out there. And feel whatever about it. What else are you gonna say about this? I wrote it. I hope to make it someday. If not, man, it's a piece of writing that is out there. And inspired by the right. You know, it's good to watch writing. I don't know what the fuck I'm saying. Shut the fuck up. Biopic drama, RV industry, Michiana, Y2K, 9/11. Yeah, don't steal this idea. And if you do, fucking take this as a pitch and just give me the money and let me fucking make the idea. Okay? You know, I didn't want them to have this feeling like, oh, someone else is going to make it. I'm like, well, I made it. The writing of it, that's the making of it. And if someone fucking takes it, well, it's online so everyone can see that I wrote it. Talk about that, you know? And I don't know, man. A few people that wrote to me, and I don't think they've ever read a screenplay before. And they're just like casual, great people. And they read it and they totally understood it. They read like all 70 pages and they're like, dude, I'm rooting for these characters. And I'm like, it makes you feel a type of way, man. I don't know. Shuffle the deck. Yeah. The untold story of uncomfort in the USA. That is kind of what the line is about. Anyways. Find it or DM me if you want to see it or send me an email and I'll send you shit and you can read it. Let's make it. Let's make this shit. I'm going to write the rest of it too. Supposed to like close out on some of the feeling. I feel like I said all I wanted to say, but I don't know if it went anywhere. I wrote a screenplay about growing up in Michiana, and I switched the characters. I made the girl the younger sibling, and then the boy the older sibling, and I have an older sister. It's different. It's totally different. I switch a lot of shit, okay? Just read. Nike should go into books. Just read, baby. Alright, that is the line. Next segment.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Jordan Lear Program. Jordan Lear Program, keep disliking and blocking online. Make sure you spell it right with two E's. Every time I look up Jordan Lear, L-E-A-R, it brings up some fucking prick, little bitch wrestler, high schooler kid who's got a way better following than I've got, you asshole. I'm rooting for you, buddy. But fucking change your name. I'm the only fucking entertainer in this shit. Anyways, Jordan Lear Program is always is sponsored by Play It Again Sports, who will not send me any money, and I have an active lawsuit against them because I bought way too much fucking hockey equipment that I never used, and I didn't unwrap it because it didn't need unwrapped. It was used, and it had impetigo all over it. You fucking, where's my money? I love Play It Again Sports. You know who I think we are sponsored by? Probably my girlfriend, Sammy. She got me this fucking Jason Voorhees toy. She got me a Jason Voorhees toy. I was, you know, I get toys. I've had the same toys since I was a kid. I don't buy toys. I'm not a big, you know, I don't buy toys. I'm not buying toys. What do you think? I'm a fucking pedophile. This thing's badass, dude. Jason Voorhees, Friday the 13th. Oh, man. I told her this is big writing influence. She got this to celebrate me writing my script because I've been telling her about it for a long time. And she's like, thank God he quit talking about his childhood. No, she's my supporter. She's the support. Dude, she got me Jason Voorhees. And it's so badass. And I am also not one to keep toys in the box. Okay? Unleash the fury. We're all gonna die. Memento mori, baby. And you know what else is a hit on the internet? Unboxing videos, right? I've never done one. I don't really care to, honestly. But I was like, 10 minutes ago, actually, I was like, if I'm gonna have this on here, I should unbox it. Maybe I'll get more views out of making a clip out of it to post. One time, this is years ago, this is my heyday, when I was like 17 or so, I got fucking arrested. This is, I'm trying to do a made up version, I'm trying to change details of a story so this could make sense. I met a police officer one time in one instance, and we were spending an extended, okay, this isn't about me, this is about someone else. My cousin knew. Was spending a lot of time with a police officer once because they were doing some business with this police officer. Anyways, they got to know each other because they're like, fuck, we got to be around each other. My friend's cousin's friends asked this officer in a different country somewhere that they go, what do you do for fun? And this police officer told them, they go, hey, I do Pokemon unboxing videos with my kids, honestly. That's mostly what I do. I'm like, really? It's like such a specific thing. He was being matter of fact that he had to know this guy. I was like, yeah, I do. I don't know. They really dig it. It's kind of a hit. I don't know. I'm like, so you got a big following? He's like, it's not bad. We're trying to get more. And he's like, yeah, I do this like pretty much every week. Sometimes like multiple times. I do a lot of editing and all this stuff on it. And I'm like, you? I mean, this looked like a fucking. I didn't say this. My cousin's friend's person. This person asked this guy, and he's telling him the numbers. And my cousin's friend person. This person also made videos and put them out every day. And they put out a podcast. And they're like, oh shit, your numbers are like that. And they're like, what should I fucking do to fucking. I don't know if this is fucking making sense. I hope it doesn't. Anyways, I know it's a hit because I've heard it through the grapevine that it's popular. From my cousin's friend over in a different country that spent a whole night with a police officer for some reason, you know? Last year. Anyways, let's do it. Jason Voorhees, what did Mama do to you, okay? What did Mama do to you? That's the best, one of the best things about Scream, the opening, when he's asking her about horror movies. He's like, who's the killer on Friday the 13th? And she's like, Jason, I saw that movie a million times. It's Jason. And it's like, no, bitch, it's Jason's mom. And the hockey mask ain't even in the first one. It isn't until Friday the 13th, part 3, that he gets the hockey mask, because part 2 is Jason as the killer, and he has a fucking bag over his head the whole time, baby. All right, let's do this. Rip into it. This is fun! That police story had nothing to do with me. It was someone's cousin in Jamaica. Is this how you do an unboxing video? I did a little rip. Do it slow. I'm just realizing it's like the 10 count in wrestling. They're like, ooh, peel it back slow. Okay. I can feel like this is one of those weird videos that someone's gonna like yak off to or something, you know what I mean? Get the fucking. Alright, now I'm trying to do it slowly. I'm having an actual fucking hard time. Ugh! It would be so on cue if Jason just jumped out of the fucking wall and yanked me up real quick. Okay, I'm having troubles. Is this. Oh, that's the problem. It's tied on there and I was about to fucking break this shit. I need to get scissors. Be right back. I got some scissors. I need my mic stand. But I didn't have enough room in the car when I went back to LA to pick up all my shit, so I fucking left them. Production quality went down. I can't. This is like a crazy unboxing video. Fucking. It's like, oh man, he's a real kid. He fucking can't open this shit. No! This is the trick. They get you to fucking. You can't open it. And you break it and you have to buy a new one. I got it. I got him. I was about to have a fucking meltdown and freak the fuck out if I didn't get Jason out of Camp Crystal Lake. Look at this, dude. You can really feel how cool it is with the helmet. Or not the helmet, the mask. I'm sorry. The mask. Is that Corey Feldman? Corey Feldman plays, he takes over the Jason mantle in like part like 4 or 5. Let's get his sword out. Hold on. To the box. So we can. Get the box there, so we threaten him with it at all times. And we get the fucking machete out. Machete. Look at this. Look at this machete. That is fucking cool, man. It's got the coloring on it. Jason Voorhees, ladies and gentlemen. Camp Crystal Lake. Pretty cool. This is a good unboxing video. Out of the box. Out of the box. Was that a name of... Dude. You know they're trying to pitch one of these guys to show up in fucking Toy Story. This would be cool, dude. You get Woody and Buzz versus Jason Voorhees. Oh, hey. Oh, hey, we have AI. Someone could do that. Someone should do that. Someone should do that. Someone make Barbie AI fucking Jason Voorhees fucking him up. Yeah, dude. Get the Ninja Turtles in there. Ninja Turtles and Darth Vader and fucking Jason Voorhees kicking ass against fucking Maybe it's them versus Freddy Krueger and Barbie and Ken. Wah, wah, Malibu Dream House. Fucking your nightmare, bitch. Ha, ha, ha. I feel like I could do a whole podcast just doing this for the rest of the time. Ha, ha, ha. Those aren't the noises that Jason makes either. Look at this hand. Oh, his hand's kind of like, come and fucking get it, bitch. Like, that's cool. It's also weird, awkward. That's how I hold my hand at the bottom. Ha, ha, ha. Rare, 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 rare. Is it arm bend? Not that it has to. I'm just curious. Does the machete go inside this hand at all? Not really. Unless it's in there like that. Oh, I did the bottom hand too. Like it's using it. It's like Jason using it for a walking stick. Rare, rare. Hi-ya. Pretty cool, man. I like it. I'm gonna do it. Do your fucking machete up right before I resume this podcast, Jason. Jason Voorhees, sponsored by Jason Voorhees. Okay. Jordan Lear program. Fan questions. Some fan questions. Most of my fan questions, comments, concerns were on the screenplay. I think I went over it. People were asking if they were in it. People were offering to play me. For instance, here's the thing back to the screenplay. Like, there's a jock character, and there's, like, a fucking, you know, dude wearing black clothes, skateboard type dude. Like, I've been both in my town, too. Like, that's the other thing. I said, like, I can see myself in all those characters. I can. Like, I did all the sports, too, but I also felt like a little punk rock against, you know, the mainstream. Whatever. As much as you could as an eighth grader. Other fan questions. Well, yeah, my friend Dave Rush, he goes, it feels good to finish it, doesn't it? And I'm like, yeah, because he's a writer, and he's like, ugh. Is it like when you start a creative endeavor, you just want it to be over. You're just like, I want this feeling to go away. Let's get the fuck rid of the way this feels. I do feel better. Another fan question. Okay. Maybe this is the last time I'm going to be on this topic, but everyone knows if you've been watching this podcast, I've been hot on the Taylor Swift. I've been posting about the Chiefs deal, the Chiefs name, and someone commented on the fucking Chiefs thing. I wrote another Chiefs tweet thing about how they should change the name, and they're like, oh, of course a white person said it. And I said, I'm not white. I'm fucking Scottish, all right? Get it right. If one more motherfucker out there wants to say I'm white, they're fucking wrong, okay? I did my Ancestry.com, all right? I'm not white. I'm Scottish. So go fuck yourself. You don't know what I've been through or what my Scottish people have been through, okay? You have the audacity to call me white when I am fucking Scottish. I got an Ancestry.com thing done. I'm even part German, bitch. I ain't white. I don't want to hear this white fucking shit. I'm English. I'm mostly Scottish. I got a little bit of German in there. What else? Scandinavian, like Norwegian, maybe a little of that. And you want to call me white? Oh, really? Like I'm some white privilege motherfucker. Really? Call me white one more time and see what happens. I'm Scottish. And I will fucking quote fat bastard to the day. I'm fat. That's better. I'm fat because I'm unhappy. I can't fucking do a Scottish accent. I can't do it now. Sometimes you can do it, you can't do it. You can take my life, but you won't take my people. That's not bad. I'm not. I swear I'm Scottish. I can't do the accent. I eat. No, I'm unhappy because I eat. And I eat because I'm unhappy. I'm fucking butchering. I can't do a fat bastard. I can't do it. I'm dead sexy, aren't I? Get in my belly. Austin Powers is so good. Get in my belly. Dude, yeah. that set off a cataclysm of people saying that every time they were hungry. Get in my belly. I eat because I'm unhappy. And I'm unhappy because I eat. Mike Myers is so good. I'm Scottish. Get it right. German, Norwegian, English. Not white. Very not white. Moving on. Program, everything I watched, I read this week, everything I viewed, I put in front of my eyes, the program. Wrapping up Black History Month, wrapping it up, watching a bunch of Denzel, a bunch of Spike Lee movies. Mostly Denzel this week, I guess, pretty much, but it's been a thing. I didn't realize that March is Women's Month, and my, you know, tism of doing things obsessive compulsive or whatever it is, I... Right on to the women's movies next, I guess. And I told my girlfriend, I'm like, God, why is it gotta be back to back feeling bad for people? I'm kidding. This is some of the best movies I've ever seen in my fucking life. It's not been a downer not having someone's making me. I just like doing it in celebration because you learn about history and I go with the months. And if it's Women's Month next month, it should be Women's Month every month. It should be Black History Month every month. I said jokingly, this is a fucking joke, before you take it out of context. I said jokingly, I was like, well, you know, they should just make it Black Women's History Month only. I was like, the rule is there's not a women's month, it's you gotta be a black woman, and if and black men, you gotta be, if you're black, you gotta be a woman for, you know, let's really center on that. Oppression. They should at least have, like, the crossover week should be only, you know, this isn't a bad idea, actually. This might catch on. Like, the first half should be only Black Women's History Month. And then Women's History Month. And then, like, we'll get the rest, you know, after this. I don't know. By the way, I'm not white. I'm Scottish. So go fuck yourself, okay? I can say whatever I want, okay? You don't know what I've been through. I've been through a lot of bologna sandwiches and Pepsi, okay? Get off my fucking back. What did I watch this week? Jackie Brown. Quentin Tarantino's probably least touted or talked about movie, Jackie Brown. Every time I watch this movie, I'm like, oh, maybe this is his best. It's so good. Dude, and it's so good in a classy way that you just like, you're watching it. You're not expecting it to be like wrapped up in it. By the end, whenever Jackie's doing the handoff with Robert Forster and Robert De Niro and what's her name? Sharon Stone? Whatever Stone? Whatever. One of the chicks, and he shoots her. It's like, dude, that movie is so good, and it makes you feel scared at times, and it's so good at making you feel scared when you think the characters are going to get each other and kill each other, and it's so funny when you see the characters outwit each other. Like, it's so good. And Pam Grier, you know, the original Foxy Brown, his take on Tarantino's take on that and have it called Jackie Brown. It's one of, you know, I think it's Tarantino's only movie that he didn't write the original source material, because it's based on an Elmore Leonard book called, is it based on The Rum Bunch? I don't know. So good. So good. And so South Bay L.A., you know? If you live in L.A. long enough, you know the regions and that Ladera Heights, Torrance, Hermosa Beach, towards Long Beach, you know, but that Redondo, Inland, Inglewood. Man, I love that area because it's got great food and great people, period. And I don't know, this movie really paints what it's like to be in that area. It's cool. Then I watched The Wood, which takes place like the same place, basically. And that The Wood came out in 99. I think it takes place in the 80s, though. Yeah, is that how it works? Like the early 80s? Dude, The Wood is so good, man. Was that with Omar Epps and Ty Diggs? And it's about, like, you know, it's about three guys going to high school together in Inglewood and growing up together and their stories and sort of one of those biopics. And I definitely helped me finish probably The Line, I guess, looking back at how it went, because I was wrapping it up, kind of looking at it. I was like, oh, yeah, I mean, this captures this funny, serious tone, drama, with funny thing. Love The Wood. And then I watched D2 and D3, The Mighty Ducks, because why the hell not? Get your fucking Estevez on. I love how in D2... Han is gone, and he's replaced by his cousin, Jan, who comes over from fucking wherever they're from in Europe. And then in the third movie, Han is back, but then he dies. And I just wish Jan would have came back. Because a lot of people think it's Jan replaces the actor in D2, and then they got the original actor back. But it was actually a different character. But then the one cousin dies and they don't bring back the other cousin. And that's why we need D4. I actually haven't watched the TV show, The Game Changers, when they came out with. I don't know. I don't know why not. It would have been really excited. I was trying to pitch D4, The Mighty Duck, for years with Charlie Conway, you know, his pro career against Adam Banks, and then him wrapping it up and him coming home to coach the Ducks. And that might be what the TV show is about, that they came up with Disney Plus. But it might not. They should have called it D4. I watched New Jack City, kind of. And I've been having New Jack City recommended to me for years and years and years. And I think it's a great movie. I only watched like the first 10 minutes of it, and then I was writing, hammering through the rest, though. I need to come back to that. Man on Fire with Denzel Washington. This is another Denzel Washington. I'm not saying this in a bad way, but the guy can be in any movie, and it's interesting, because I don't even remember really what goes on. Oh, yeah, he's protecting this little girl, Dakota Fanning, but Denzel, he just always shows up, and it's interesting. It's like you can be not paying attention for 10 minutes, and then you're like, oh, I like his attitude. I like his swagger, you know. Then I watched The Bone Collector. I didn't really watch The Bone Collector. They came out back in like 99 or 2002. I was writing through this. Him and Julia Roberts, some thing. Every 10 minutes I looked up and he was doing a decent enough job. I don't know. And then I watched The Hurricane. And I did watch this all the way through. This is a great movie. This is great. The true story of the hurricane. Reuben Hurricane Carter, the boxer that was wrongly convicted of murder and spent 22 fucking years in prison, holy shit, and he totally didn't do it. Oh, man. Denzel plays him. Yeah, he's a heavyweight champ. His fucking box is like the real deal. This is one of the saddest stories ever. That would make me go fucking crazy. I know people. I know people that have been wrongly convicted of things on a much more minor level. I know people, a lot of people that have been wrongly assaulted and convicted, all this shit. And this Reuben Hurricane Carter thing is just so heartbreaking, though. But got a happy ending. Dude made it. It's a true story. Wait for the movie of this. And Denzel Washington's going to play him. That's going to be my movie. I'm going to make a movie about my life, and Denzel Washington's going to play me. All right, that was it for movies. TV, watch Love is Blind. Now, I know Love is Blind has been kind of popular, but, like, it's super popular right now, man. Everyone's on that shit, and they're like, it's the hot fucking thing. And, yo, me and my girlfriend, we've been watching Love is Blind. We've been waiting. We've been waiting so long that we, like, didn't realize a new season came out until everyone's fucking tweeting about it. We're like, all right, fucking. But it's cool. It's cool. I think there's a lot of acting. I think half of them are plants. If not, I think there's a good chance all of them are actors. There's a good chance. It's so entertaining, though. Fucking reality shows are so good. What's her name? The girl that plays Jess, the hot fucking whatever, the real Megan Fox girl on there. She liked one of my comments. I don't know. I'm trying to follow everyone in the world on Instagram and like the shit to burst the algorithm or whatever. She liked it, and I was like, a celebrity fucking liked me. Probably not. It's probably her goddamn assistant. I don't know. I was watching Gargoyles. I guess that was my casual fucking chill nap cartoon show. Then New York Undercover. Yeah, New York Undercover. Watch the pilot to that. I loved that show growing up. Dude, New York Undercover. I don't know the names of the actors off the top of my head. Eddie and I forget the other guys. I don't know. It's just a good show. Anyways, it's like a crime show, undercover cop show. I didn't realize until I looked up Wikipedia this week, it's in the Law and Order universe. It's executive produced by Dick Wolf. And it's like there's some similar, some of the same like actors that play psychiatrists or paramedics or different small parts and bits and stuff. It's like it's part of the coherent Law and Order universe. And I'm not even a Law and Order guy, you know. I think it's great. I've just never marathoned it like everyone has. I've seen it casually, and it's like, yeah, Law and Order is great. All the fucking everything. New York Undercover is a Law and Order show. Fuck yeah. And what else? I feel like I looked up and there's another thing that was a Law and Order show. The Chicago series, FD and all that, those Chicago PD, all that shit, and FBI. Ah, it's kind of cool, but it's kind of not because you're like, oh, there's only so much out there. I don't know. All right, that was that for TV. And then on TV, live, I watched the SAG Awards, and I don't know if I can watch award shows, or maybe I just need a break, you know? Like, I've been not an award show guy, and then I'm like, oh, well, I'll get into it. It's cool, and it's been fun, and I always get pumped for I always get drunk for the Oscars and fucking watch that. I make my picks, and I still like that, and so I got up for the Golden Globes. I even got up for the Critics' Choice, but I was watching the SAG Awards. And it was weird. Like, just seeing the celebrities go up. Dude, you know what fucking weirded me out? Billie Eilish goes up there with Melissa McCarthy. And mind you, I also look up for some reason, I'm looking up Melissa McCarthy and seeing that week that she's cousins with Jenny McCarthy. Which I thought was weird because I was like, well, they don't have anything to do with each other. Like, and I thought Melissa McCarthy had this like story of an underground comic for years or something. And I'm like, well, if they both know each other, they're probably both from some like rich fucking connected family. And I look up, they kind of are, and I'm like, ah, fucking Illuminati. The Illuminati will not take my email, by the way, or my application. Preface this, I want to be in the Illuminati. However, I'm like, oh, God, they must be Illuminati. So I see fucking Billie Eilish, and, you know, Billie Eilish is at all these fucking movie shows, even though she's not an actress and shit. Whatever, I get it. She's doing music for the fucking shit. However, it just screams and bleeds Illuminati everywhere, and she's... They're up there. Mind you, I want to be in. I want to be in this club. I don't want it to go away. I just want to be in. And they do some thing where Melissa's like, I'm such a fan. I want an autograph. And then Billy does it on her fucking head. Like, she signs her name with a marker on Melissa McCarthy's forehead. And I'm, dude, I have no shame. I'll do anything for fun to get a laugh. You know, I'll get naked in front of fucking people to fucking get it. Laugh, you know, let some ride. I would do that, you know, I'm sure, but like something about it just screamed like it was some frat boy shit, you know, like it felt like someone was like, hey, Melissa, you need to, we're gonna do this bit with her doing the marker thing on you. And I feel like if she was like, hey, I don't know if I want to do that, they would have been like, oh, really? Well, I don't know if you're gonna be the next fucking Disney movie then, okay? You want to be Little Mermaid 2 or not? And she's like, okay, I will. You know. Seemed like that. I don't know. I heard a similar story that Kid Rock was telling on Rogan about being at this Illuminati type. I don't know. Big people were around, and they had him bring his guitar, and they wanted him to play just for them, just for this small group. And he's like small group of rich people, you know, like casually. And he's like, nah. And it just felt, it's just weird, like they just, it's like a control thing. Dude, my tin hat is probably going off. I'm probably wrong about this. Point is, I couldn't finish the fucking show because of it. I was like, the whole thing's fucking weird. I was like, I was having fun playing along, and it builds people's names, and you go out there and shoot your shot, but I was like, I ain't letting no one fucking write on me with a fucking marker. There's pictures of me being teabagged online. Who am I to say? There's a picture of my friend from high school, Scott Bocamp, teabagging me years ago. Okay? Maybe I'm not above it. But I don't know. I didn't have to finish that SAG Awards show, man. I didn't. I don't know who fucking won. I'll probably get up for the Oscars. I don't know. For stand-up this week, I watched Mike Epps, Ready to Sell Out. Dude, Mike Epps is so fucking funny. I'll just give it away, like, what he says at the end, because he is so fucking funny throughout this whole special. Like, he's got this bit how he's like, if you want to live a long life, you keep fucking up, okay? Keep making God work with you is what you fucking need, man. He's like, if you get it all together, memorize all your scriptures, God might call you home. He might say, you're too good for this world. Dude, Mike Epps is so funny. He's been a stand-up for so long. And, you know, stand-ups, like writers, you really take it to heart. You know, when people call themselves a comedian, you know, you're like, are you a comedian, or are you just funny in front of the camera? Because, like, a stand-up gets the fuck on stage, and it's hard, and it's really hard to keep it up, you know what I mean? Mike Epps has always been a comedian, and he's in recent years called out Kevin Hart and other guys that were blown up, saying that they sold out. And he says this at the end of his set. At the end, he goes, I know for years I've been saying Jamie Foxx is a sellout, Kevin Hart's a sellout, Will Smith, all them people who have been calling them sellouts. And he goes, I'm a little older, and I think I'm ready to sell out. He's like, being a real motherfucker don't pay the bills, man. Oh, dude. His special is so funny, and I've watched so many unfunny specials recently. Like, I've been trying to stay in the whatever to watch people's specials. Oh, it was a breath of fresh air. Like, I've listened to Mike Epps' special, and I felt better after I heard it. I was like, whew, thank you. It still exists. I think that fucking Amy Schumer, fucking Sarah Silverman horse shit. Like, thank God someone's funny. Documentaries. This week, I watched, there's a whole series of specials called Untold on Netflix right now. These untold sports stories. Dude, every single one of them is a banger. Oh, first they had the Malice at the Palace. which is about Ron Artest and Jermaine O'Neal and Steven Jackson and Reggie Miller getting in a brawl with the Pistons in like 05 at the Palace and punching a couple fans and all the shit. I'm totally on the side of the players, by the way. Those fucking Pacers should have won a championship that year. Deserved. Dude, it was so fucking good. You just need to watch this shit about the fan throwing a fucking cup in the air and watch that. I watched Untold Flagrant Foul about Tim Donahue. Tim Donahue, the ref that was rigging games. Dude, that was rigging games for years. And, dude, when this dude talks about it, just the whole thing's rigged. Everyone's felt that way for a while. You know, and maybe you know, some games might be real. Some might be a little bit more real than others. But this dude said he could make picks on who would win based on who was reffing, and the refs weren't fixing the games. It was just he knew which refs didn't fucking like which teams and who had, you know, like you could just do that. You just knew the way it was. And he's like, you could influence it yourself if you really wanted to. And I don't know. That was fucking awesome, man. Then I watched Swamp Kings about Florida football, Florida Gators football from like 05 onward. Dude, this fucking, I'm in a show coming out, one of those American Crime Story shows about Aaron Hernandez in that time period. But also, this is so good, dude. Urban Meyer making those fucking psychopaths go, or making him into psychopaths over football. Urban Meyer's winning fucking championships, and then he can't sleep at night. He's addicted to Ambien, and these players are just beating the shit out of each other and fucking Warzone. And Tim Tebow, the fucking virgin Jesus Christ follower, just leading the fucking bunch. Is he Jesus Christ or is he a Mormon? I don't know. Whatever. Watch it. Swamp Kings. They had one on Johnny Manziel. It was great. I watched Crime and Penalties, about this fucking hockey team, the Danbury Trashers, who this kid was the owner because his dad was the mob boss that like bought the team. And he like was obsessed with pro wrestling, and he just hired all these enforcer type hockey players to whoop everyone's ass. And they're fucking selling out tickets like crazy. It's like Slapshot. And I don't know. I'm looking back. I saw this fucking team play the K-Wings in Kalamazoo back in the day, dude. I saw the Trashers fucking play them because I remember because in the documentary they have a black guy on the team. And there's like zero black guys in hockey. I mean, you know, there's some, but very few. And I'm like, I remember them playing, and that guy being badass and beating the shit out of the K-Wings and their fucking trash mascot. Dude. That's a good documentary. God, I'm so fucking spent. All right, and then poetry. I read Maya Angelou. Little Maya Angelou. I know why the cage bird sings, because she's skank. I don't know, not a skank. Maya Angelou. I think she's my favorite poet, though. Because I get it, dude. I get it. And her poetry is about pain, and it is about lust. And it is about shame, and it is about anger. It's about joy. It's about happiness. That's why I regret. It's cool. I wish I had memorized any of it, but I didn't. Well, I should be at this time. I'm very tired and exhausted. I feel like I said everything I could possibly say. Please like and subscribe. Send me a dollar on Patreon or more. Support the Jordan Lear program. JORDANLEER. Come and get it. Send me a question. Send me a comment. Send me a concern. Support me. Keep Googling my name so it pops up more. Type it into the search. You know? And I hope you enjoy your time. Everywhere. This takes me back. This is the second episode I did of this. Me and Callan Welsh. It's pandemic time. Coming out of pandemic time. This is at the Comedy Store. This is at the Comedy Store. This is on the little outside fucking, what do you call it? The wall. Yeah, it's pointing outwards on Sunset. We're leaning against Pablo Francisco's name or some shit. All right, it's Jordan Lear program. I'm fucking done.
got a whole lot of options. Now, I ain't you no business, man. I'm a working man, but they won't fucking let me out there no more, so I gotta call the shots. I call him like I see him, and I see he probably a hell of a worker. Get out of my line. I also see it's 50-50. You might take this here first paycheck and head back to Arizona to race up doing number 8. So I start you at 295. And if you make it to week 2, you're earlier in the day. I'm making an even tree for the greatest race car driver alive.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.